There's no other market where you really have no idea what a service is going to cost you before you consume it, except for in healthcare.
A new law requires healthcare providers to inform people about the potential costs before they receive care. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Monday, May 28th. Good evening, I'm Ann Hillman. Also tonight, an Alaska fish company is looking to increase its brand recognition in China.
Per capita consumption of seafood in China is mind-boggling. I mean, you're talking, you know, by some estimates, 40 kg per person per year.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by Matson, committed to the communities it serves, building on more than 50 years of service to the communities of Alaska. Learn more at matson.com. And by Alaska Heart and Vascular Institute, committing to improving the lives of Alaskans. Using a team approach, Alaska Heart and Vascular Institute offers a range of cardiovascular diagnoses and care. Learn more at alaskaheart.com.
It could soon be easier for Alaskans to know how much they're going to pay out of pocket for healthcare. The legislature passed a bill requiring doctors and hospitals to provide cost estimates before patients receive services. Alaska Public Media and KTOO's Andrew Kitchenman reports on what lawmakers want and the concerns healthcare providers have.
Deciding whether to undergo a medical procedure can be difficult. Anchorage Democratic Representative Ivy Sponholz says not knowing how much you're going to pay makes it tougher.
When you go to buy a car, you find out, you know, there's a list on the car that says exactly what the car is going to cost, but there's no other market where you really have no idea what a service is going to cost you before you consume it, except for in healthcare.
She sponsored a bill that would require doctors, hospitals, and other providers to list prices for common services. The bill also requires providers to give their best estimate of what a patient would pay out of pocket. The bill received support from employers that provide health insurance and the insurance brokers that help them purchase it. The measure is modeled on similar rules enacted in Anchorage last year. Anchorage City Manager Bill Falsey says many have welcomed the new price transparency.
We certainly heard some concerns from some healthcare providers, but we were able to work through the vast majority of those, and we received a lot of enthusiastic response from a lot of insurance groups and some consumer groups, folks who are worried about the cost of healthcare in Alaska.
Doctors argue that listing the prices before any potential discounts can be misleading. For example, consumers may actually pay less out of pocket for services at one practice with a higher listed price than they would at another with a lower listed price. That's because out of pocket costs for patients with insurance depend on the rates their insurers negotiate with providers.
This is one of those cases where a little bit of information is almost worse than no information at all.
That's Juno doctor Joseph Roth. He told the Senate Judiciary Committee that the bill may lead providers with lower listed prices to raise their prices.
Posting charges by physicians actually leads to an increase in overall healthcare costs, as physicians are then able to see what other providers are actually charging.
Hospitals also expressed concern with posting the undiscounted prices. Jeannie Monk represents the industry as the vice president for the Alaska State Hospital and Nursing Home Association.
There isn't necessarily a correlation between high cost and the highest quality, but sometimes in patients' mind there is that. So sometimes if patients see something costs more, they think that it's better.
And this can be a problem. For example, public workers don't pay much directly. That's because their insurer covers most costs.
Most of Alaska's public plans still have relatively low deductibles for their employees. However, private sector plans are increasingly adopting high deductibles, and that's where price transparency becomes more important for those employees that are more engaged.
Sponholz says the patients who benefit most from the bill include those without insurance, as well as those with high deductible insurance.
Those plans are designed to incentivize, you know, wise consumption of services, and you have to know what they cost if you're going to be a wise consumer.
Doctors and hospital leaders alike say insurers are in a better position to tell patients what they'll have to pay. But insurers say providers know more about how complicated a treatment might be, which will affect the cost. Sponholz says both insurers and hospitals support patients knowing what procedures will cost, but she says neither wants to be the bearer of bad news regarding out-of-pocket costs.
There is definitely a hot potato element of in the healthcare price transparency and in the cost element of healthcare, with insurers and providers throwing the hot potato back and forth and both pointing fingers at the other one, saying the other one is the problem.
Sponholz and other lawmakers say the bill would be a good first step. They say future legislation could focus on making the potential value of healthcare services to patients more transparent. The bill hasn't been sent to Governor Bill Walker yet. In Juneau, I'm Andrew Kitchenman.
Trident Seafoods has been selling fish in China for 20 years. There's actually a lot of Alaska-born seafood in China. Walk into any McDonald's and pick up a fish sandwich, it's all wild Alaska pollock. Still, the average Chinese consumer probably doesn't recognize Trident's three-pronged logo. That's because they've been selling seafood primarily as a commodity in China, not as their brand. But that might change. The company sent a team with Alaska Governor Bill Walker's trade mission to China, and that team is working on a new strategy. From Alaska's energy desk in Beijing, Rasha McChesney dives into the world of seafood.
It is not difficult to find a seafood market in Beijing.
So we got split snow crab legs, and I got sea scallops. Maybe octopus.
Where's your stuff?
Clearwater. We're not in here yet.
That's Jeff Wellborn. He's the senior director of the Chinese business office for Trident Seafoods. Trident isn't new to China. They've got operations in the port cities of Dalian, Qinghai, and Weihai. What is new is the way they want to promote and sell their fish here. Wellborn and a few others from Trident joined Alaska Governor Bill Walker's 10-day trade mission to China. The whole idea was to deepen trade ties between the two, and Trident is on board with that mission. On a bus trip across Beijing, we talk strategy for getting their products into some new markets.
Per capita consumption of seafood in China is mind-boggling. I mean, you're talking, you know, by some estimates, 40 kg per person per year.
What's a kg?
2.2 pounds, so like over 80 pounds of seafood per person per year, by some estimates in some markets.
But this is not easy. There is a huge demand for fish in China, but a lot of it is farmed.
Creating comfort and demand for a species that doesn't currently resonate with consumers is a huge challenge. And so wild Alaska pollock, you know, wild Alaska pollock is something that we have worked really hard to make sure is differentiated as a very transparent, sustainable, and prestige fishery.
Wellborn says a lot of Alaska pollock is already being consumed in China, but Chinese citizens likely don't realize that it's wild and from Alaska.
It is kind of a lot of beating your head at the wall until it breaks.
And so, Wellborn and his team are exploring ways to bring their fish to a new market, a digital one. Minnie is one of the members of Wellborn's new team in China. She met us outside of the Beijing headquarters of JD.com Incorporated. It's an e-commerce company with an enormous platform of about 300 million active users. Think Amazon or Alibaba. Trident already has some of its seafood listed on this site. People can go online and one-click order something wild from an Alaska seafood company and get it shipped right to them. Grocery stores could do it too, and Trident wants to expand that reach. After a tour, the group heads up to a boardroom to talk business. And it's not just seafood here, although that is the bulk of the trade delegates in the room. It's also people from the Matsu Borough and Bambino's Baby Food. The group talks for a few hours about everything from what the e-commerce giant buys and sells to when and how they should market it and who should pay for that marketing. And while they don't come to any firm deal, it's clear by the end of the meeting that they've made progress. And Wellborn's China-based team is going to follow up with the company. From Alaska's Energy Desk, I'm Rasha McChesney in Beijing.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, Vietnam reflections from a Kotzebue veteran.
You ask any veteran how long they was over there, they'll probably give you down to the hour of what time they left and they were glad to come home.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Alaska Pipeline Service Company, sustaining Alaska's pipeline for 40 years and counting. And by Wells Fargo, offering financial tools to start, run, and grow a business. Learn more at wellsfargoworks.com.
City and borough officials announced Thursday that another groundwater contamination hotspot has been found in the Fairbanks area, this time around South Davis Park. In response, Borough Mayor Carl Castle says the Parks and Rec Department will no longer use water from contaminated wells to irrigate the park's heavily used sports fields. KUIC's Tim Ellis reports.
The State Department of Environmental Conservation notified borough officials 10 days ago that test results have shown the presence of poly and perfluorinated compounds in groundwater under South Davis Park. DEC says the contaminants, referred to by their abbreviations as PFOA and PFOS, probably came from the use of firefighting foam at the city's regional fire training center. And Castle says it's now spread from there to the park.
The plume of contaminated water has gone as far as to underneath our South Davis Park, where we have soccer fields and softball fields and a bunch of outdoor recreation facilities.
Castle says the Parks and Rec Department will no longer use wells that have been found to be contaminated with the chemical compounds, and he says borough officials are looking for other sources of water to irrigate the fields with.
We don't have any definitive resolution yet on exactly what we're going to do. We're looking at options of using water trucks, possibly trying to run long irrigation lines from city water systems outside of the park.
The mayor says as far as can be determined, the playing fields are safe to use.
We're confident the facility is safe right now. We haven't irrigated since last summer, so I think with the rain we've had and the snow melt, et cetera, the ground is probably safe. We're fairly confident in that.
The water-soluble poly and perfluorinated compounds are considered emerging contaminants that have been linked to a number of health issues. The Federal Environmental Protection Agency has established health advisories that include, among other things, limits on the amount of lifetime exposure to the chemicals. But concerns over the health effects and calls for action to address the problem have grown in recent years, both nationwide and locally.
The borough has been asleep at the switch. The city tried to make some response, but was half-hearted.
Dave Berry lives just west of South Davis Park, and he's a member of a local group of homeowners and others who are worried about the health impacts of the chemicals.
They've known about these problems. They've refused to do anything about it for our neighborhood. For a long time.
The firefighting foam contaminants have been found in several areas down gradient from the fire training center. It's also been found in wells around Moose Creek, which is thought to have come from Eielson Air Force Base, also on Fort Wainwright, and in neighborhoods near Fairbanks International Airport. And Barry says it's time for local leaders to push for solutions to the problem.
The city should be joining with the borough and going after the real culprits, and that's the manufacturers of these chemicals and get some help from our senators and have something done about it.
Castle says local officials have responded. The city has provided alternative sources of drinking water for people who live in areas affected by the contamination. And the mayor says right now the borough is focused on the problem at the park, where numerous sports teams play throughout the summer.
Our children can't be without recreational activities out there. That's far too important of a facility for us. We have literally thousands of soccer players and hundreds of softball players that are affected by this.
Castle says local officials expect to have the results of more tests on groundwater under the park in a couple of weeks. In Fairbanks, I'm Tim Ellis.
10 of Alaska's 20 Indigenous languages were represented at the Alaska Native Language Revitalization Institute last week at the University of Alaska Fairbanks. During the four-day-long program, participants shared learning tools and techniques, and speakers immersed themselves in their language during work groups. On the final day, participants voiced appreciation for the experience.
My name is Gladys Drinoff. I'm from Huslia. When we have potlatches and stuff, our late dad, Edwin Simon, used to say, don't leave the place without saying thank you. So, Anna Bassett to everybody. I learned really lots. Thank you.
We'll be strong. I'm Pauline Demas from Nunawak, and it's so good to be here and see all these people and languages, and it feels like we're one.
Working group representatives also talked about ways of increasing the number of native language speakers, including through charter schools. But Haida speaker Dolores Churchill emphasized learning should not be limited to the Western classroom model.
We all learn from our parents, and we learn from experimentation. And teachers forget that, and that's why so many of our children are having a difficult time in the schools.
It would be a complete pleasure to be able to see Haida being spoken in the homes as a first language.
Ben Young pointed to a vision developed by the Haida Language Group to have a fluent mass of speakers in 30 years.
It would be a complete pleasure to be able to see Haida being spoken in the homes as a first language, right? As I seen earlier, we talked about the idea of us being second language learners, but teaching our kids to be first language learners at home. That's something that rings true for us, and that's something that we'd love to see.
Videos of some of the sessions are available on the UAF website. The Institute wrapped up last week. This week, UAF will host scientists from the U.S. Department of Energy for Alaska National Lab Day. National Lab scientists, along with Alaska researchers, officials, and industry leaders, will present their work and discuss opportunities for collaboration. Senator Lisa Murkowski, who helped organize the event, is scheduled to speak. Larry Hinsman is the university's vice chancellor for research. He says that event will highlight research opportunities in Alaska for the Department of Energy on a variety of issues, including energy, climate change, and security.
We think we've got some great challenges right now for them, and we hope that they'll pick some up.
Among those challenges are things like reducing rural energy costs and designing infrastructure that can deal with climate change.
And to do that, that requires a lot more understanding than we have now, a lot more development of engineering capabilities, and just a wiser designs and structural development.
Hinsman says that's one area of collaboration he hopes the national labs will be interested in. Scientists from around the circumpolar north were in Alaska earlier this month to share information about a holistic approach to public health. Federal Center for Disease Control Arctic Investigations Program Director Tom Hennessy says scientists from Finland, Canada, Russia, Norway, Iceland, and Alaska met at the University of Alaska Fairbanks, focused on an approach known as One Health.
Nearly three quarters of all of the new emerging infectious diseases have come to us through the environment or the animal world. So to better understand and protect the health of humans, we need to better understand what's going on in the environment and the animals and birds and plants that we interact with.
Hennessy says that's challenging in remote northern communities where a larger percentage of the diet is wild foods.
Because the monitoring systems for, say, meat inspection don't exist in dispersed communities. And so the efforts to understand the threats to humans take more work and rely more on local knowledge.
Hennessy also points to the complicating factor of climate change.
That's bringing lots of questions about what kinds of emerging threats might be coming to us that could be dealt with in a One Health perspective.
A great example of that is that, you know, as things warm up here, we're likely to get more ticks. Ticks bring certain diseases.
That's Arlene Reynolds, Associate Dean of UAF's Department of Veterinary Medicine and UAF's One Health Initiative leader. Reynolds says anticipating problems is key, and studying animals can help. He points to dogs, which share the environment with humans.
Because their metabolic rate is high, we can see changes in them much more rapidly than we can with people. And so by studying them, we can often understand how those changes will affect us as well, and maybe be a little bit more proactive.
The One Health researchers also visited Seward and Anchorage as part of the Alaska trip, which was organized by the U.S. State Department.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Northern Air Cargo, providing year-round transportation of all types of freight, from vehicles and oversized equipment to small packages for corporations or small business. Northern Air Cargo, serving Alaska since 1956. Heroin is an opioid known for risks of addiction and overdose. But prescription opioids such as hydrocodone, oxycodone, morphine, fentanyl, and codeine can also carry these risks. If you're prescribed an opioid for pain, ask your medical provider about the risks and ask about alternative treatments. Learn more about opioid safety at opioids.alaska.gov. This message brought to you by the State of Alaska Department of Health and Social Services.
The Bristol Bay Fish Expo is gearing up for its second annual extravaganza. It will feature a variety of events aimed at developing the commercial fishing industry in the region and Bristol Bay communities. One of this year's highlights will be a debate between gubernatorial candidates. KDLG's Avery Lill has more.
Four candidates running for state governor in November's election will participate in the June 9th debate at the Bristol Bay Fish Expo in Naknek. Incumbent Bill Walker, Mike Dunleavy, Mike Chenault, and Scott Hawkins will answer panelist and audience questions related to the theme Sustainability in Rural Alaska. Rhonda McBride of KTVA will moderate the discussion. Katie Copps-Wilson is an event organizer. She said that holding a debate off the road system will focus attention on issues particular to Bush, Alaska.
This debate is more of educating our future governor in what we deal with in rural Alaska and how they want to sustain the heartbeat of Alaska, which is rural Alaska. And if we don't sustain it, the culture and is potentially lost, but also the out-migration of rural Alaska really affects urban Alaska and infrastructure.
In addition to the debate, the Fish Expo is bringing back some of the most successful events from last year, including a trade show and live auction. Another favorite that's making a reappearance? Speed hiring.
We framed it after speed dating. Captains, potential crew will come and they'll meet and we'll have them organize where potential crew will have 3 minutes with each potential captain. It works very well, actually. It works very, very well and people are very happy with it. We made some good matches last year.
While many Bristol Bay Fisheries stakeholders attend the Pacific Marine Expo in Seattle in the fall, Copps-Wilson said that the Bristol Bay Fish Expo meets a targeted local need.
Here, it's a concentrated market where you're just looking at Bristol Bay fishermen. And so, you know, it's the boat builders who are specific to Bristol Bay are coming up here, you know, and launching their new boats and lines. And it's the businesses that are specific to Bristol Bay now have a venue that they're not drowned out by all these other places. And it's also a very affordable event, which, you know, more local people can participate in and celebrate their businesses.
Close to 50 vendors are registered, and nearly all the tables for the event are sold. That's a slight growth from last year's 44 vendors. All the proceeds from the Fish Expo benefit Little Angels Child Care Academy in Naknek. Last year, it raised roughly $15,000 for the program. Events kick off June 8th with a keynote speech by Katie Ringsmith on the history and legacy of Bristol Bay Canneries. The Fish Expo concludes on June 9th. In Dillingham, I'm Avery Lill.
Bethel smells like fried smelt. The small fish started swimming past the town last week during their annual run up the Kuskokwim River. Hundreds of people flocked to the seawall with dip nets to fill their buckets and get a taste of fresh fish. KYUK joined them at the riverfront.
It happens year after year, springtime. 2 or 3 days the smelts run, and then they'll pass towards upriver.
Ah, fresh fish, fresh fish. We just catch them and fry them. One-time deals, one time. My wife dries them, smoke them a little bit till they get golden brown. Then you just break them up and eat them.
Do you like some more of those?
Yeah.
For me, it's means the big black ducks are coming. And we go hunting for those.
You heard from Rachel Salafi, Lillian Brown, and Kai Luck. The piece was recorded by KYUK's Christy Schellenberger. Alaska has the highest concentration of veterans nationwide. From World War II, the Korean and Vietnam Wars, and both Gulf Wars, more than 70,000 veterans have served in the armed forces. Now, more of their stories can be heard online. The Alaska Communities of Memory Project just published the recorded stories of veterans from Kotzebue and the surrounding villages. Chester Ballett was born near Selawik and served in the Vietnam War. He told his story in front of an audience at the Nana Museum in Kotzebue in 1996.
I was stationed in the Mekong Delta, southwestern portion of Vietnam, and into the 52nd Signal Battalion. I was scared when I was over in Vietnam, mainly because they were shelling us, they were attacking us with mortar shells, and I was scared to the point that I drank a lot. The motor had landed about 15 feet away. It blew up the Jeep. I didn't hear it because I was passed out. And I said enough was enough. I started working night shift because I could hear when the incomings was happening. Because they never attacked during the daytimes and I could sleep during the daytimes. And I quit drinking. You ask any veteran how long they was over there, they'll probably give you down to the hour of what time they left and they were glad to come home. And I'm really glad to be home again. That's my war story.
That was Chester Ballett, a veteran of the Vietnam War. His story was recorded in Kotzebue as part of the Communities of Memory Project with funding from the Alaska Humanities Forum. To hear from more veterans in Kotzebue, go to jukebox.uaf.edu. And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. Tonight's stories can be found at our website, alaskapublic.org. You can find us on Facebook at Alaska Public Media and follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Andrew Kitchenman in Juneau, Ravenna Koenig, Dan Bross and Tim Ellis in Fairbanks, Avery Lill in Dillingham, Christy Schallenberger in Bethel, Emily Russell in Anchorage, and Rasha McChesney in Beijing, China. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Wesley Early is our web editor. And I'm Ann Hellman. Have a great night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by ConocoPhillips, investing and exploring on the North Slope and creating economic opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, unlocking Alaska's energy resources. ACPE's education loan refinance can save you money and give you just one bill for all your private, state, and federal loans. The Alaska Refinance Loan offers Alaska residents a 4.95% interest rate with no fees. You choose between a 5, 10, or 15-year plan. Go to acpe.alaska.gov/radio or call 1-800-441-2962. This message sponsored by Alaska Commission on Post-Secondary Education. Never miss another episode of your favorite PBS primetime programs thanks to Afternoon Tea on Alaska Public Media TV. Every weekday, you can catch up on the drama of Masterpiece. Be amazed by our universe with Nature and Nova. Search for garage treasures on Antiques Roadshow and solve mysteries alongside our favorite detectives. Watch Afternoon Tea weekdays from 3 to 5 p.m. only on Alaska Public Media TV. This is Statewide News on Alaska Public Media.